It's no secret that the tech industry has had a long-standing diversity inclusion problem. The lack of diversity inclusion in the industry isn't just a superficial issue. It's arguably a root cause of many larger issues that plague tech. It has implications for justice and fairness, but it also results in devastating flaws in the industry's own products. For example, unjust facial recognition technologies that exacerbate discrimination against people of color, or virtual reality headsets designed primarily by and for men, and that cause a disproportionate number of women to feel nauseous when they use them. Now imagine trying to bring your authentic self to this type of work environment. Calls to bring your authentic self to work ask for passionate people with diverse and fresh perspective to challenge the status quo. But too often, the workplace culture fails to support the authenticity of professionals of color and other represented groups, which then typically leads to backlash and fewer opportunities. Today, I speak to Jenny Lam, a tech industry veteran. Jenny has spent over 15 years scaling and accelerating high-growth consumer tech companies in San Francisco, New York City, and now Toronto. She is currently the Chief Business Officer at Wattpad. Jenny and I talk about what it takes to show up authentically and to create work environments that foster a deep sense of belonging for everyone. Hi, Jenny. Tell me what brought you to Toronto and what you're doing now.
I am an American refugee to Canada. I was born in California, actually, but then spent most of my youth in New York. And I've worked in tech my entire career between San Francisco and New York. And I never thought that I would leave any of those places. That's the, you know, tech center of the universe, it feels like, but also is very negative in certain ways. And then I met a young man in New York. Canada's number one export is nice people. So I met a Canadian. And then, you know, many years later, we got married and his family is in Canada. So we said we'd give it a try for 2 years. Literally, I gave him a 2-year timeline. And I always thought that we would move somewhere else, back to the States, somewhere else. I wasn't sure. I didn't see Toronto necessarily as my home. But we've been here for 6 years. And every year I've really learned something different about it and myself. So I've really grown to love it. And it's really nice to be able to say that because 1 year in, I was pretty sure I was out of here. So it's really changed.
What have you learned about yourself then in the 6 years here?
You know how you have this expectation of who you are and how you show up in the world? And, you know, I think I had like a trailing expectation of myself because in my 20s, in my late 20s, which is when we moved here, I loved going out. We loved to do things very cultural in the city. We took advantage of a lot of those things in New York and San Francisco. And even New York compared to San Francisco had so much more to offer. And that's where I grew up. I was just used to being able to go to the largest, you know, Museum of Natural History in the country at on a whim. And so I kind of still had that expectation of myself, but then we had kids, you know, when we were here. And then I saw the value and amazingness of having his family nearby and how nice it is that there's a park in every neighborhood. And so I started to just realize that the things I was prioritizing shifted. And Toronto is actually an amazing place for the things that I now prioritize, which is like convenience and kind people and diversity. And so those things started to really become much more important than, you know, access to the coolest NPR live show or whatever things I used to think was really cool.
When you say diversity, I mean, you lived in quite diverse cities when you were in the US. So how do you think diversity differs here in Toronto than the cities you lived in the US?
I actually see big differences, but I'll caveat it by saying it might be a superficial understanding. In New York, I grew up in Flushing, Queens, which is, I'm pretty sure, at some point, if not still, the most diverse city in the country. At least at some point it was that. So there were so many ethnicities, races, countries, languages represented, but there was very little mixing, very, very little. There were the pockets of where the Koreans lived, the pockets of where the Hispanics lived, the pockets of where the Asian Chinese, you know, immigrants lived. And I'd say that's kind of representative throughout most of the country in my personal experience. And then I, you know, observed in Toronto that there were, one example is many more mixed race couples, including male Asian and Caucasian female. Whereas in the States, you almost rarely never saw that combination.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I remember noticing it and being like, oh, there's another mixed race couple, but the male is Asian and the female is white. And distinctly just recognizing that felt different and seeing many more friends group, like young teenagers and friends groups that felt like they were more mixed. And so there's something, I don't know if it's true, I'm curious if you feel this way. There's something around the diversity here that felt more like a part of just the experience as opposed to so segregated and feeling like you're very much the other, even though everyone in the States is part of the other.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you find it?
I lived in London for a little bit. I studied there and I found the same, what you're saying about the US or Flushing, how there are pockets of diversity. I found that in London and it was really surprising because there was so much diversity, but it was in different, and they weren't connecting with each other in any way, which was phenomenal. Because in Toronto, I guess maybe because there's a lot less, the number, we're smaller in size in terms of city, there was just a lot more movement between the different areas, right? Which I thought was really interesting. And I valued that about Toronto, similar to what you're saying. But I think in Canada, what I'm finding, particularly now, the conversation around ethnicity and race, I almost feel like it's harder. We seem to think in Canada, we know how to do multiculturalism, that we are not comfortable with the conversation and we haven't done multiculturalism perfectly. We have lots to learn, because if we did do multiculturalism perfectly, we'd see a lot more diversity in corporations and organizations. And so I think that's one of the drawbacks of kind of thinking, wow, Toronto is, there's so much more fluidity and movement between the different regions and areas within the city.
So it's really interesting because I hear that a lot I'm in tech. You asked earlier what I do, and I'm the chief business officer of the Wattpad platform. And I'll share a little bit more about that later. But in the tech circles, it comes up a lot that people say, you know, just because we're Canadian doesn't mean that we're not equally racist or worse, or don't deal with these troubles. And then people will point to Indigenous communities, Black communities as being particularly underserved. So everyone seems to recognize it, but it almost feels to me like it sits at that level of conversation and somehow isn't breaking into either the mainstream or the media. And so feels like there's a lot less maybe action around it, even though I think there's a lot of goodwill. And I haven't figured out why that's the case yet.
So tell me more about Wattpads. What do you do there? And how are you finding it right now working there with everything that's happening in the world?
Wattpad is a very special company. 50%, roughly 50% of our leadership is composed of women. Roughly 50% of our leadership team is composed of people of color. Literally, it's one of the few tech companies that I've seen that is actually majority women. And so you talk about safe space and how important it is to have that safety. And for a tech company to provide that kind of a psychological safety is something very unique. So I'm very happy to talk about Wattpad. Not everyone knows what Wattpad is, even though it's used by 90 million people around the world on a monthly basis. And it's because it's a storytelling app and community. We're actually now a global media company, but we started out on people's flip phones. You could read, you know, 30 words on your flip phone screen at a time. And in the past 14 years has grown into this truly global community across devices around the world, small screen and big screen. We're sharing stories that you really can't find anywhere else. And we're sharing it because anybody can read and write on Wattpad. And so we just have this incredible diversity of voice and content and stories that you would literally cannot fathom. The stuff that's on here is unbelievable. And we've been able to use the data driven by hundreds of millions of minutes, you know, being read on a weekly basis. We're able to use that data to identify the stories that, you know, that could be the next big hit. And so we've had some incredible successes to date, some names that I think, you know, folks would be familiar with, because we were able to give a platform to an aspiring writer who then found an audience, who then gained millions of reads, who then got a book deal, who then got a movie deal out of it. And that's sort of the journey that someone can take on Wattpad. And as the chief business officer, my responsibility is to make sure that we help this community grow. It's all about making the decisions, helping, you know, the organization's structure, putting in place the operations, providing the safe space and the safety for both our employees as well as our community members to continue to grow and reach our vision of connecting and entertaining the world through stories.
How is Wattpad able to create the culture that it currently has, where you have more women in the organization, such great diversity in terms of racial and ethnic diversity, and you've been able to create, which is rare, that psychological safety for diverse groups? What led to that?
Oh, I wish there was like a pill that we could all just take and then I would just distribute it for free everywhere. It's a very, I think it's actually a rare combination of two things: founder DNA and very intentional investments that we've made along the way. So the founders are two immigrants to Canada. Both of them are Asian and did their undergrad training in Toronto, in Canada. And they had a perspective and an appreciation for diverse voices because they themselves represent that. I've worked with a lot of tech companies, 3D printing, mobile payments, ad tech. I've worked in a lot of spaces, and I've never worked with such truly humble individuals who really have very solid values and at the same time are incredibly driven. And so that's a really special combination where I found myself not spending a lot of time, you know, when you feel crappy when you go to work and sometimes people can't pinpoint it. I usually say it might be a mismatch of your values and the company's values. And you're fighting that tension on a daily basis and that wears you down. I haven't spent much of my energy at all in that space. And so there's something around literally the founder DNA and how they appreciated that. And they made the space for other voices. They made the space and the priority to say, I may not be right. You may be right. What other opinions are there? Let's go and see. And so that's a big part of it, but that's not the only thing. There was also a period, I want to say 4 years ago, when we then actually looked at what was making us very special and said, we got to go invest in this. And so we literally put money, budget, first and foremost, for small companies. That's usually one of the first things that is the make or break. If you can put money behind it and key metrics behind it, you may think you don't need to, but it's that thing that really is a catalyst. And so we created a D&I committee.
Oh, great.
Composed of people who work throughout the organization. And we said part of their job, you know, expectations is to help with this and therefore less delivery on the other things. Not that it's just more work for you, but it was throughout people throughout the company in existing parts of the company so that it was really ingrained and came from bottoms up as opposed to top down. And, you know, a big part of that is, how does your company make decisions? Wattpad is a very data-driven company. That's how we make our recommendations for the stories you read. But it's also, we are data-driven individuals. And so we measured all of our activities. We had action plans in place and we measured engagement on D&I and we published that throughout the whole company. We published that publicly as well. And because we are data-driven, if we have the data, that's what we need for action. And so it's a little bit of making sure your company culture and practices are aligned with your D&I work, which we continue to try to do and improve on. Those are some of the factors that have contributed to it. At the end of the day, it's the people. You know, I have a fun story for you.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
Working in tech my whole career, I had to pretend that I liked to drink beer and play ping pong.
Yes.
Because, yeah, like I can, yeah, right? You know exactly what
yes.
People, we know what this feels like.
Yes.
And just to fit in or make friends or whatever it was. And I don't like beer. I just don't like it.
Yeah, me neither.
And that was, whatever, 10 years of my career. And then I got to Wattpad. I didn't know much about the company, but I knew that it was a place that valued diversity. And I remember the first social event that I was invited to was a women's clothing swap, where you bring in the clothes that you don't want anymore.
Yeah.
And you can like take home someone else's item or anything that's left over. We donated it to a women's shelter. And this was the first social event. And I remember seeing it on my calendar and being like, is this real?
Yeah.
Wait a second. This feels like a place for me. And I felt like I found my people.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt like this was a place that not only allowed, but absolutely encouraged you to show up in that way. If you want to do a women's clothing swap, go run a women's clothing swap. And so that was an important signal for me that of the people who are here, but also the kind of company that this would be. And you better believe I showed up differently because I felt like that, right? I felt like this was a place that I could thrive.
Jenny, you've been in the tech world for your entire career. So I'm wondering if you have any examples of where you felt that tension you talked about earlier, where your values and the values of the company don't connect and you feel a bit gross or just icky. And how did you deal with that?
I don't think I always dealt with it well. And I've had to learn over time how to identify that mismatch. But you know, when you wake up in the morning and you reach over to your phone, I remember you doing that and just feeling a pit in my stomach when I would touch my BlackBerry, because back then it was BlackBerry, and dread reading the emails that came in. And so for everyone, it's a different signal. For me, that was a pretty obvious signal by that point that things were not going well at work. And when I talk about the mismatched attention, that could show up very differently for everyone too. Sometimes it's just the leader, right? There's a lot, to be honest, there's a lot of crummy leaders out there.
A lot.
I didn't know that. I just thought anyone who makes it to the C-suite or the CEO position or the big boss position, I just thought that they were qualified and good people.
Yeah, me too. Isn't it crazy? Because I, same thing, I thought if you're in that position, it's because you're exceptional. And then you start to see, no, those are not the qualifications all the time.
Oh my goodness. And so there's a lot of time that you spend questioning yourself, because clearly they must know, especially I think as a Asian American or an Asian person, where you are really taught to respect elders and don't question them. I feel like that took me a long time to realize that, wait a second, it's not me. I'm not crazy. It's them. They're terrible leaders. They're making decisions that are not only not great business sense, but also really terrible to people. And so the misalignment of tension shows up in things like, you know, when you fire someone, how do you treat them? When you're unhappy with performance, how do you engage? What do you actually value in what your company is trying to achieve? And I just remember many, many instances where I would be very frustrated at whatever strategic direction we were making or the decision, and I didn't have a seat at the table to influence it. And so then I just felt stuck in a position where I had to go execute on something that I didn't believe was right and didn't feel like it was serving the right cause. And oftentimes for a leader that wasn't a good person. And so all of these things combined is like, that's the mismatch of values. And it felt different at Wattpad. I felt across the leaders that I've had, I started out working for a woman named Melissa Nightingale. And she was, you know, before I even started working for Wattpad, when I first moved up here, she was an American expat. And she just took me out to lunch and just spent 2 hours being like, this is what you need to think about for taxes. This is what you need to think about for immigration protocol. And just kind of give me the lay of the land. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're a good human.
Yeah.
I think I would like to work with you as a human. And so over time for me, I've started to really prioritize the people and what are the signals for the people to look out for that represent then the values of the company. And I think when those things are aligned, then I spend very little time now just, you know, stewing in anger over, even if I disagree with the decision, because at least I know the decision wasn't coming from a place of very big values mismatch.
How did you find your voice then, where there will be times in the corporate world or in an organization where you don't agree? Have you decided to go along, or have you had to work on speaking up when you felt that something wasn't what it should be?
I mean, I could probably write a Wattpad book on this topic. Shout out to Wattpad. Okay, so here are probably three things that have been really instrumental. First is, I mentioned earlier how Wattpad is data-driven. I'm also quite data-driven. I have a high need for information, not just data, but when I make a decision, I like to have a lot of information about whatever decision I'm making, whereas some people really go by the gut. That aspect of myself means that to understand myself, I actually need data about myself. Whereas someone who might be a go by the guts person, I don't know, maybe they would go do a bunch of tarot card readings and that would be enough to inform them. But for me, I actually need data about myself, my performance, and especially my strengths. I worked with a career coach when I became the general manager of Wattpad, because I literally was like, what does a general manager do? And she gave me all these different kind of tests to help me understand how I think, how I work, how not like a Myers-Briggs personality test, but really what drives me, you know, how I show up differently from other people. She did a very thorough 360 with 10 people in all aspects of my life, not just work. And these were all really important pieces of data that helped me understand, oh, okay, so I'm really good at, you know, parsing complex information and communicating it out. I'm really good at connecting with people. I'm really bad at making decisions in complete silos and without any information and context. Knowing this about myself was like armor. It was like, oh, okay. So this is when I'm strong and what I can lean into. And when I feel insecure, I know what's driving it. And so at least I know how to kind of course correct. Or when I'm working with someone new, I tell them these things about myself. And I'm like, here, how I operate best. This is when I'm in flow. So this is what I need from you. What do you need from me? And so that's one thing of like, however it is that you need to go learn about yourself, go learn about yourself. I need information. I ask a lot of questions about me, about whatever decision we're making. And that's been really helpful in building the confidence on how I show up and my decisions. That's one big one.
How has this data helped you find your voice and step into yourself?
It's definitely an evolving process because, you know, I think about what I looked like 6 years ago when I joined Wattpad. And when I joined, it wasn't as general manager, it was as a growth lead. And I definitely didn't show up in this way. So the other aspects of it is also personally for me, over time, learning and experiencing what drives other people and how they show up. Because oftentimes I find when you're in a meeting, in a situation where you don't speak up, for me personally, I remember it'd be because I would look around the room and someone would be really loud. Like, well, that guy must know what he's talking about. He's so loud. I would only speak with that level of loudness and confidence if I really knew my my stuff. I don't know if you have any children listeners, like little five-year-olds that are trying to climb that corporate ladder. But if I like really knew my stuff and then I realized that, oh, wait a second, that's what it would take for me to be like that. But that guy doesn't have any information or knowledge or kind. That's just how he shows up. That's just how he talks. Mm-hmm. And so I remember distinctly in business school, a moment where, oh man, there's a classmate of mine who's tall and built and brilliant and went to Harvard undergrad, played basketball, baritone voice, worked at all the top banks and just looked like he was a million bucks and knew everything. And he was so confident and smart. And I remember one day in class, he literally said, you know, he shared an insecurity about himself and that he's had to really work on showing up, you know, really bold and confident because he has this insecurity related to his, you know, upbringing and family. And I was like, oh, that's a show. Oh, like you show up with a show. And so it just never occurred to me, even though it's so obvious, that people show up differently. So noticing that, you know, observing that and understanding a lot of times when people are really loud, they're actually driven from a place of insecurity. And for me to understand that gave me the ability to know that, you know what, I am an expert and I know my stuff in this area. I've done my homework, or I may not know. And I'll just start the sentence with, I don't know if I know, but I think I disagree, right? Give me some more time to come back to you with why, but that doesn't feel right. And even giving myself permission to say that is like, okay, I may not have everything to back it up, but at least I've said something when I feel in a disagreement, and I haven't said enough that I feel I would be embarrassed or something later on. And that's made a difference as well.
When I've led teams of white with white men in them as well. And I often wonder, are they connecting with me? How do they see me? So what is your experience like when you're re-leading a team and there might be someone, a group of men and perhaps a number of white men? Do you show up differently? Do you feel that they see you differently?
I'm sure. We've actually, so again, right, kind of one of the last things about how you can show up differently or how you find that confidence also is the system, is the environment. So I think at Wattpad, I show up one way or I have this confidence. I imagine at a different company that doesn't value D&I so much, I may show up very differently too. And at Wattpad, we've actually had conversations with my white male counterparts about what it's like to be a racialized woman leader. And we have very honest conversations around where he disagrees with some, he's like, he doesn't understand why I would be offended by a comment on how someone is so surprised by how well-spoken I am. And I'm like, I know that sounds like a compliment. I know you think so, but because you've never experienced the years of microaggressions and commentary that are similar, especially as a perceived demure, you know, Asian woman, and then to be told that they're surprised that I'm loud, or in other instances being told that I'm stubborn. I'm like, you can't possibly understand why that's not necessarily a compliment. And we've had those discussions. And so I'm a very collaborative, pretty transparent person. I really like working with people, and that's part of why. And so I find it easier to lead from a position where, or to partner from a position where we can just kind of talk about these things, and we can even agree to disagree, but at least we've gotten that on the table, so that weird tension mismatch that happens, right? That's not there all the time, or that's not there at the back of my mind when we're making a decision. We can literally be like, well, like we talked about last time, I don't want to speak at this event because blank, you know, or whatever it is. And so that's been very helpful. And then the other thing is the company has to be in support of everybody making that progress in terms of that learning and understanding. So putting in place the training, right? We have training on how to be an ally. We have training and documentation on, you know, sharing people's lived experiences. And these things, it often really does come from a place of ignorance. And these things are making people more aware. And even that act, I think, is valuable and important. And so it's not on me to solve the problem. It's not on me to solve their lack of knowledge in a particular area. The company is responsible for helping move everyone forward, and helping the company get there, I think, is important, right? And it can't always be on the racialized woman to make that change. And that is, I think, a big part of why I feel like we continue to make progress and why there's so much more progress to be made.
How are you feeling right now with everything that's happening in the world? How are you feeling about yourself, your company, and the world around you?
You know, it makes me worried. It makes me worried because, you know, you and I have talked about this, where you would have thought we would have seen more change by now. And it feels different. You know, it kind of gives me some goosebumps to say that. It feels different. Will it be different? And that's what worries me. And so we kind of have to do everything we can, all of us collectively now. But when I see old Asian grandmas getting hit in the face on the streets, it's just like, it really makes me question how much more we need to go in this world. And that's the part that's really tiring. But it's also the part that's invigorating, because you can also start to see real change and people having conversations about it. Mm-hmm. Social media plays a really interesting role in all of that. And so there is something that I'm hopeful for, but it is really exhausting carrying that around.
The world is changing quicker than ever before. We don't know for certainty what will happen over the next few months or the next few years, but we will continue to adapt and share stories of strength so that we come out on the other side as a more inclusive, kinder, and understanding society. Thank you for listening. I'm Shilpa, and you've been listening to Her Climb. Did you enjoy the show? Then subscribe to Her Climb Podcast so you don't miss an episode. Her Climb Podcasts come out every week in our very first season. Thank you.